Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, this is the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation out of South of Philadelphia, Louisville, Texas. Today is May 27, 2017, or the Sivian 2, 2021. We will start our third service on the Sabbath day with a song entitled, Yahshua is Tenderly Calling. Yahshua is tenderly calling, behold, calling today, why from the sunshine of love wilt thou blow, farther and farther away, calling today. Page 36, it says, the words thoroughly purge his floor denote an absolute purging which leaves her without spot, wrinkle, or any such thing. Not until this clean work is accomplished can Yahweh logically say unto those who are in Babylon, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sin, that ye receive not of her plagues. Revelation 18:4. Indeed, were he to do no better than simply bring them into another place where sin still abounds, he might far better leave them right where they are. This final work for the congregation, being of such great importance, is still further elucidated in the prophecy of Malachi 3. Of this impending purge, hope and spawn and heartening unto the righteous, but terrifyingly sorrowful unto the wicked, the prophet declares, he shall suddenly come to his temple, the congregation are the floor, but who may abide the day of his coming, and who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire, and like fuller's soap, and he shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver, and he shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Yeshua an offering in righteousness. Malachi 3:1-3. Now I'd like to say, okay, actually, we're in track 4, which is Latest News from Mother, and we're on now the top of page 37. An explanation of this scripture, the denominational publication, published and owned by the denomination as well as endorsed and used by the Sabbath School Department throughout the world in 1929, Isaiah the Gospel Prophet, Volume 3, page 49 says, verse 20, Isaiah 59, the Redeemer shall come unto Zion. This is what happened in 2002 at the Passover. That's the only place on this earth where we had Mount Zion of the prophecy of what we're just reading about. It was stationed right there at Charmant, Texas at Gilead Center. And that's where the Redeemer, Yeshua, he came to Zion. We know that it says right here on page 36, I just read it, of this impending purge, impending. And so Brother Johnson was teaching all during 2001, 2000, and the beginning of 2002, the latter part of 2001, a voice spoke to me and told me that there's going to be a changing of the guard starting at the Passover of 2002, and going to culminate at the Solemn Assembly of 2002. And so therefore, I knew that the Redeemer was on his way. I knew personally that the Redeemer was. And then Brother Johnson prophesied and said, the Redeemer is coming to the Passover in person this year, 2002. So I knew what the Holy Spirit told me, that 2002 was the year to start the judgment at the house of Yahweh with the ancient man before the house. That's in 1 Peter 4:17 and Ezekiel 9:6. Those two verses go together. That starts the judgment, and it tells who it starts on. It starts with the ancient man before the house. In other words, the last prophet that was put in charge of the candlestick of leadership for the seventh day of the church is when it comes time for the Adventist church closing work to take place. It took place with the last prophet in charge of the candlestick of the Adventist church. And that was Brother Johnson. Now, he was the ancient man before the house. In other words, he was the oldest and the last one to bring up the closing of the Adventist church. So it's quite prophesied that there's going to be a closing of the work for the Seventh Day Adventist church. And she said, read Ezekiel 9 for that closing work. And she explained it, that it would be the sealing of the 144,000, the sign of the closing work would be the sealing of the 144,000. And so we know that's exactly what happened. So it says, Isaiah, the Gospel Prophet by M. L. Andreas in 1929, Volume 3, page 49, said, verse 20, Isaiah 59, the Redeemer shall come to Zion. This is not the coming in the clouds, but coming to the church, and when he comes, he will do the work mentioned in Malachi 3:1-3. So he suddenly comes to his temple. Okay, this official exposition of the text shows that in 1929 the denomination taught that the prophecy of Malachi 3, promising a thorough work of the purification, is a message unto the congregation. Proceeding from the Malachi's disclosure of the purification of the sons of Levi, the lesson leads us unto the law of the firstborn, the first fruits, and in Yahweh's original plan, the firstborn of every family were to be the ministers of the temple. The firstborn of the flesh, therefore, are the type of the firstborn of the spirit. So the firstborn of the flesh, Ishmael, that was born unto Abraham and his household, out of season, by the will of the flesh, because Sarah wanted it done that way, because she had lost faith in bringing forth the promised seed that was promised her. She had lost her faith, And so she told Abraham to take her bondmaid, Hagar, and bring forth a firstborn unto the household of Abraham. Abraham's getting desperate. He's 85 years old. And he needs to have this done. And he's feeling like he's getting late in life. So anyway, the Ishmael was a type of the firstborn of the Spirit. Believe it or not. And so 15 years later, Isaac was born by the Spirit. He was the one that's preordained by the Spirit. And he became the firstborn of the Spirit. So you have to have a firstborn of the flesh first to be a type of the firstborn of the Spirit. And both of them are in the same household together. So Danny Trent, Brother Johnson, was the firstborn of the flesh. He was the oldest. He took the command of the ship in 1970. I was sent there by Yeshua after Brother Johnson got the church organized and the foundation laid and everything going, and then Yeshua sent me to join him. And I became the firstborn of the Spirit. And it was obvious for the next 33 years that that was the case there at Kermit, Texas. And though the typical firstborn lost their priestly inheritance unto the Levites. Now the Levites today translates into the 144,000. The first fruits born of the Spirit out of the Adventist Church. Yet in the restitution of all things in the final Davidian period, Acts 15:16, this office will be restored unto the antipical firstborn, the first fruits of the harvest, Revelation 14:4. For they are the servants of Elohim, Revelation 7:3. That's the 144,000. This restoration, therefore, is to follow their absolute reformation, resulting in the perfect safety. If with but one Achan in the camp, the Israel of the Joshua's time was powerless to stand before the heathen, then what hope has modern Israel with hundreds of Achans, Testimony Volume 5, page 157, in her midst, to stand through the approaching time of the trouble, such as never was since there was a nation? Today, as yesterday, there is for her but one door of hope, the Valley of Achor. They're sitting at her free from the sinners, forever. Yahweh will then bring her out jubilantly, singing as in the days of her youth and as in the day when she came up out of the land of Egypt. We're looking right at that day right now, right in front of us. And it shall be at that day, saith the Yahweh, that thou shalt call me Ishi, and shall call me no more of Bela, Hosea 2:16. Well, the Adventist Church, those Jesuit General Conference leaders that infiltrated and took over the leadership of the Adventist Church, have directed that all the Adventist congregation continue to call Yahweh by his pagan title that the Greeks give to him in the first century, and that's God and Lord, and that's the titles for Baal, okay, of the Old Testament. And so therefore the Adventist Church then are guilty of continuing to blaspheme that holy name, and so Yahweh took it out of their mouths, Adventist mouth, the sacred name. But yet Yahweh raised up a prophet to the Adventist Church, Brother Johnson, that tongue-in-cheek, he restored the sacred name in 1970 along with all the other divine institutions. that had been trampled underfoot by the man of sin during the Dark Ages and carried on by the Adventists, trampling those same divine institutions underfoot. Even though Ellen G. White had a vision, and she told him that 2300 days met its fulfillment in 1844 at the Atonement, and that the sanctuary was to be restored and back to its rightful order and put into operation by the Adventists. And they ignored that until 1930, when V.T. Otis came on the scene, the second feeding pastor. He introduced the laws of Moses. Only introduced them. He didn't restore the sanctuary. He just introduced the laws of Moses as being binding upon Yahweh's people today. But he wasn't given the commission to restore. So Brother Johnson was given the commission, and that's when this Ishi means my husband. It's just another word for my husband. But at least it beats better than saying my God, which means Baal. She shall then no longer call him my Lord, but rather my husband. Margin. For the relationship of a husband being closer than that of a Lord, it denotes an elevation to a more intimate connection and walk with the Yahweh. So, when you restore the sacred name, it shows that you have found a new love. You have found new inspiration. You have found a higher feeling about your connection with the Father. Because now you know his real name, and he has granted that you should call him by his real name. It's not so high, exalted, and sacred so much that he won't let you speak it like the Pharisees taught and the Sadducees. They condemned people to death for using that sacred name. Yahweh introduced himself to his people with the sacred name and intended for them to call him by his sacred name. It's a lot better than changing it to a pagan title and calling him by a pagan god, which they use for Satan. Well, let's continue. And that this elevation is the direct result of the Reformation is evidenced in the words, For I will take away the names of Balaam out of her mouth, and they shall no more be remembered by their name. Hosea 2:17. When Yahweh has taken his people through this refining, purifying process, Testimony Volume 3, page 541, and has brought them forth as fine gold, seven times purified, with the dross burned out forever, then will he be able to fulfill his promise. And in that day will I make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, and with the fowls of the heaven, with the creeping things of the ground. I will break the bow and the sword and the battle out of the earth, and will make them to lie down safely, Hosea 2:18. In spite of the ultimate joy and glory unsurpassed, which this message of the hope sits before the angel of the later sin, who is in charge of the candlestick, the church, he is still warned against the message. Now, who are we talking about here? Let's read that again. And in that day will I make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, and with the fowls of the heaven, and with the creeping things of the ground, and I will break the bow and the sword and the battle out of the earth. I'll make them to lie down safely, Hosea 2:18. In spite of the ultimate joy and glory unsurpassed, which this message of the hope sits before the angel of the later sins, and that was Brother W. Johnson. He's that angel. In 2002, at the judgment time, when the judgment began at the house of Yahweh, who is in charge of the candlestick, the church, he is still warring against the message. In spite of this wonderful, beautiful message of the future that we had in front of us down at Crummett, Brother Johnson still continued the war against the very message that he was given to restore all of the house of Israel and the 144,000 to them. His message for 33 years is that the 144,000 is consigned to this movement, and we are in charge of bringing them forth. And all the time, he's warned against the very message that he was preaching to bring forth the 144,000. And when he sees the ultimate picture, that at the end of this rainbow is this utopia of a heaven like a heaven here on earth, like a Garden of Eden right in front of us. And all he could do was continue to war against it, but his wife led the warfare. If Yahweh's people but sufficiently sensed their unpreparedness to meet the coming crisis, and could but see themselves standing as it were before the mouth of the dragon, they would tremble and faint for fear. But alas, the pall of the sensibility enveloping them is so great that he who comes as a harbinger of the hope and release, instead of being gratefully welcomed, is viciously attacked as though he were a Finnish harpy or some gorgon or hydra-headed monster, and all because they know not the hour of their visitation. That's exactly the way they acted down at Kermit. The hour of their visitation came, they did not know the hour. When the Yahshua will destroy them in his fury and save the righteous in his mercy. That's exactly what happened. They were destroyed in his fury by the Spirit, and he saved us in his mercy. He saved the house of David, in other words. The fact that the names of the children in the Hosea's vision are Lo Ruama, no mercy, and Lo Ami, not my people, when representing the Old Testament period, signifies, as previously seen, that Yahweh would no longer extend mercy to the members of his church, the Seventh-day Adventists. So when he punished them by the heathen, the innocent suffered alike with the guilty. But the names Ruama, mercy, and Ami, my people, this is the house of David now. My people now in 2002 was the house of David. Show that now in the latter day period, he will have mercy upon them. That's the house of David. But not upon the house of King Saul, or Esau, or Ishmael. Or Mahershala Hasbaz, those four. He will have mercy upon them by destroying the wicked only, sparing all the righteous. Behold, the days come, saith the Yahweh, that I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and with the seed of beast. It shall come to pass that like as I have watched over them, to pluck up and to break down and to throw down and to destroy and to afflict, so will I watch over them to build and to plant, saith the Yahweh. In those days they shall say no more, the fathers have eaten the sour grape, and the children's teeth are set on edge. But every one shall die for his own iniquity. Every man that eateth sour grape, his teeth shall be set on edge. Jeremiah 31:27-30. Plainly therefore the constituency of the church in both periods is depicted by the same two children, Lo Ruama and Lo Ami, except that in the latter period their names are altered. The scripture, she shall sing there in the New Testament period, as in the days of her youth, as in her first state in the Old Testament period, and as in the day when she came up out of the land of Egypt, Hosea 2:15. Attests that the experience of Yahweh's ancient people in going out of Haran and out of Egypt will be repeated at the present time. There shall be an highway for the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria. Okay, now, who is Assyria today? That's Babylon, any way you measure. Like as it was when which shall be led from Assyria, like as it was to Israel in the day that he camped out of the land of Egypt, Isaiah 11:16. Thus in that day shall the branch of the Yashur be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth shall be excellent and comely for them that are escaped of Israel. It shall come to pass that he that is left in Zion and he that remaineth in Jerusalem shall be called holy, even every one that is written among the living in Jerusalem. And the Yashur shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion, and shall have purged the blood of Jerusalem from the midst thereof, by the spirit of judgment and by the spirit of burning. Well, the judgment started in 2002. It cometh. It started in the very house of Israel that I was a member of. I was there because I was one of those that came under the judgment. Passed through the judgment, and we're still continuing on. And the yellow will creep on every dwelling place of Mount Zion and upon her assembly. A cloud of smoke by day and the shine of a flaming fire by night, whereupon all the glory shall be a defense. There shall be a tabernacle for a shadow in the daytime from the heat, and for a place of refuge, and for a covert from the storm and from rain, Isaiah 4:2-6. This glorified repetition of Yahweh's leading and exodus movement by the shepherd's rod showed that he is again using the same method to bring modern Israel out of the nations where the Jews failed to make their kingdom a working model of theocracy ordained solely to manifest Elohim's power and thus convert the world to their precious faith. The present kingdom movement must succeed. Yahweh's plans know no final failure. Sooner or later they will be carried out. See Patriarchs and Prophets 2:83. So today, in the Antitype, the Yahshua's voice crieth unto the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and that was at Gilead Center, 2002. He cried, that was when it met its fulfillment. And the man of wisdom, parentheses, the teachable, shall see thy name. Yeah? I saw the name. Yahshua, I saw it. It came out in Gilead Center early on. My wife and I saw it together, and we started using it at Gilead Center. Hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed? Rod means the authority for Yahweh's government. He chose Moses, and he made an example of the rod with Moses. He chose David, he made an example of the rod with David. Called it a staff in his hand, a staff and a sling. And by a prophet, the Yashur brought Israel out of Egypt, and by a prophet was he preserved, Hosea 12:13. Obviously, therefore, Yahweh will pity all who come under the authority of his rod today, confessing their sins and seeking mercy, but he will have no mercy upon the disobedient, not even upon any who covet the Babylonian garment of today. By the Achan's illicit possession of the goodly Babylonian garment is typified that class of the church members who covet the worldly styles and fashions in vogue now, when Israel of the today is about to enter the promised land, and the price he paid, they shall pay, read Isaiah 3:16-26. Not only they shall pay it, but also those who, following in the next steps of the Achan, covet silver and gold. Achan's taking the Yahweh's money represents that class of the church members who covet the silver and the gold, which he has set apart for himself, and who thereby rob him of that which is his own tithes and offerings. Those who withhold that which is his and appropriate it for the use according to their own wisdom, as well as those who oppress the harlot and his wages, the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his right, and fear not me, saith the Yahweh, of the host, Malachi 3:5, are acting Achan's part, and therefore are cursed with a curse, even this whole nation, Malachi 3:9. The tithes and the offerings are of the Yahweh's substance, and those who think that they can so manipulate them as to accomplish whatever end is desired are deceiving themselves, not Yahweh, for his command is, bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse. Well, the storehouse is also is another name for kingdom, bring them to the kingdom. And that's the kingdom of heaven here on earth, the house of David. That there may be meat in mine house, Malachi 3:10, because this is where present truth is coming from on a daily basis right here in his house. The storehouse is the only place designated where one may bring the tithes and offerings and unload from his shoulders the heavy responsibility which a faithful stewardship imposes. To do otherwise with them is to leave one's account in the heavenly ledger standing in the red, even though one may appropriate them to some meritorious work of charity, while it is yet today. Therefore, flee from this sin of Achan before it is forever too late. As I live, saith Yahweh Elohim, I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked turn from his way and live. Turn ye from your wicked, evil ways, for why will you die, O house of Israel? Ezekiel 33:11. Those who will today hear his voice and harden not their hearts as in the day of the provocation, will he make his future servants, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Yahweh of the Yahshua of the host, Zechariah 4:6. In other words, the workers will be taught rather by the unction of his spirit than by the outward training of the scientific institution. Yahweh will manifest that he is not dependent on learned, self-important mortals. The most weak and hesitating in the church will be as the David, willing to do and dare, Testimonies, Volume 5, page 82, 81. Moreover, I will take illiterate men, obscure men, says the Yahweh, and move upon them by my spirit to carry out my purposes and the work of saving souls. The last message of mercy will be given by a people who love and fear me. Review and Herald, September 21st, 1905. He will use men for the accomplishment of his purpose, whom some of the brethren would reject as unfit to engage in the work. Review and Herald, February 9th, 1895. For these workers, the Yahweh is graciously sent. Unto these workers, the Yahshua is graciously sent. And strangers shall stand and feed your flocks and the sons of the alien, those who are not of the 144,000, shall be your plowmen and your vine dressers, but you shall be named the priest of the Yahweh. Men shall call you the ministers of our Elohim. You shall eat the riches of the Gentiles, and in their glory shall ye boast yourselves, Isaiah 61:5-6. What an exalted privilege to be able to acknowledge no master but Yahshua, and to engage only in his work and live on his substance. As this ministry of which there hath not been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it, even to the years of many generations, Joel 2:2, is to be free from all earthly encumbrances. Therefore let no one longer delay in effecting the transition which will ultimately see him engaged heart and soul in the Yahweh's closing work for the church, the end gathering of the first fruits who are to be sealed from among the living. And while giving himself to this work, he will at the same time be preparing himself to give the message in the time of the loud cry. which the purification of the church, the deliverance of the sealed, and the destruction of the unsealed is to usher in, and which those who are to be purified are to proclaim. Let each one wisely make this imperative transition by gradually curtailing the pursuit of his own interest and increasing the pursuit of the Yeshua. In this way, each one will steadily climb from an empty and unsung past of the self-enterprise unto a full and glorious future of the divine enterprise, which shall call forth from the uttermost part of the earth songs even glory unto the righteous, Isaiah 24:16. Let me tell you, said the spirit of prophecy, if your heart is in the work and you have faith in Yahweh, you need not depend upon the sanction of any minister or any people. If you go right to work in the name of Yahweh in an humble way, doing what you can to teach the truth, Yahweh will vindicate you. If the work had not been so restricted by an impediment here and an impediment there, and on the other side an impediment, it would have gone forward in its majesty. It would have gone in the weakness of first, as the Yahweh of the heaven lives. Review in Herald, April 16, 1901. See also Testimony, Volume 7, page 25. My brethren, if you choose to have a part in this grandest of all work, the crowning act and the redemption of the world, you must now quickly make ready that not the cares of this life rob you of the crown of eternal life. Do not offer excuses for not making the change. Stand not on the side of those who shall say, I have bought a piece of ground and I must needs go and see it. I pray thee, have me excused, or I have bought 5 yoke of oxen and I go prove them. I pray thee, have me excused, or I have married a wife and therefore I cannot count. Luke 14:18-20. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passes away and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of Yahweh abideth forever. 1 John 2:16-17. Therefore, while yet engaged in your present occupation, go ye into the vineyard of the Yahweh, and as your interest there grows, let your private interest be diminishing until you find yourselves completely divorced from them and wedded to the Yahweh's. Time, says the spirit of prophecy, is short, and our forces must be organized to do a larger work. Laborers are needed who comprehended the greatness of the work and who will engage in it not for the wages they receive, but from a realization of the nearness of the end, the time, the man's greater efficiency and deeper consecration. Oh, I am so full of this subject that I cry to Yahweh, raise up and send forth messengers filled with a sense of their responsibility, messengers in whose hearts self-idolatry, which lies at the foundation of all sin, has been crucified. Testimony, Volume 9, page 27. But as the harvest is great and the labor is few, heaven is compelled to finish the work and cut it short in righteousness. Romans 9:28. Hence the Yeshua himself now will take charge of the flock. Well, that's what happened at Kermit. There was very few members there at Kermit when it came to its end in 2002. You only had 4 families there represented. Less than 10 people, members of the Gilead Center, when it came to its end. And it shall come to pass in that day, I will hear, saith the Yahweh, I will hear the heavens, and they shall hear the earth. Hosea 2:21. While the phrase, I will hear the heavens, show that he is on the earth, The phrase, they shall hear the earth, shows that by the means of the angel, there will be constant communication between heaven and earth. Testimony, Volume 9, page 16. He will use ways and means by which it will be seen that he has taken the reins in his own hand. The workers will be surprised by the simple means that he will use to bring about and perfect his work of righteousness. Testimony, Ministers, page 300. And as Yahweh will take charge of the flock himself, Testimony, Volume 5, page 80. See also archetype number 1. Having taken charge of the firstborn, the first fruits of the harvest, he will use them together, the second fruits. And the earth shall hear the corn, and the wine, and the oil, and they shall hear Jezreel. Hosea 2:22. The first clause makes clear that when the Yahshua himself takes complete charge of the flock, a great harvest of souls is to be gathered in. For the earth shall hear the corn, and the wine, and the oil, the spiritual food, in other words, the message. And they, his brethren, in the church and in the world, shall hear Jezreel, the messengers. And who is this Jezreel? He's the master prophet, and typical Elijah. And I will show her unto me in the earth, and I will have mercy upon her that had not obtained mercy. And I will say unto them which were not my people, thou art my people. And they shall say, thou art my Elohim, Hosea 2:23. The promise, I will so multiply her unto me in the earth, there is further substantiation that there is to be an ingathering of the souls after the purification. Hence, Jezreel's message accomplishes all this before the final close of the probation, that for the world. This evidence upon evidence makes clear that after 144,000 are sealed and are separated from among the wicked and the congregation of the Seventh-day Adventists, Yahweh will send them unto the nations, for they shall declare his glory among the Gentiles, and they shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto the Yahweh out of all nations, and a clean vessel, and to the house of the Yahweh, Isaiah 66:19-20. Hosea's family allegory further shows that in the time of Jezreel's message, the whole world shall behold the glorified relationship of the father, mother, and children. Hosea's wife being represented of the Yahshua's wife, Hosea 2:2. Hosea himself is a representative of the Yahweh, and since his wife is his church, she and her children are a representation of his church family, ministers, and laity. It says that she represents the ministers because they bring forth the converts, the children that make up the laity. Unto Jezreel, Hosea's firstborn son, in the vision, comes the command. Say ye unto your brethren, Ami, and unto your sisters, Ruama, plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife, neither am I her husband. Better therefore put away her whoredoms out of her sight, and her adulteries from between her breasts, Hosea 2:1-2. From this we see that Jezreel, one addressed as symbolical of a prophet, who is to command his brethren, Ami, and his sisters, Ruama, to go to their mother and plead with her to reform the names. Ruama and Ami represent a brother and a sister, singular. But in commission Jezreel to speak unto them, the Yahweh designates them in the plural, brethren and sisters, embracing the entire church membership. Obviously, therefore, Yahweh ordained that one of the laity, Jezreel, his chosen agent, was to herald the message to Ami and Ruama, his brethren and sisters, who in turn were to plead with their mother, the minister. The Yahweh has plainly made known this procedure because he knew that the majority are ever prone to lean on their ministers for the revelation of the truth, and because they forget the tragic fact that in the closing work for the church in each period, the ministry kept the flock from accepting advancing truth rather than leading them into it. Truly, it is not enough to have good intentions, not enough to do what a man thinks is right, or what the minister tells him is right. His soul's salvation is at stake, and he should search the scriptures for himself, however strong may be his conviction. However confident he may be that the minister knows what is truth, this is not his foundation. The most humble and devoted in the churches were usually the first to receive the message. This truth has been repeatedly illustrated in the history of the congregation. Many of the professed followers of Yeshua refused to receive the light from heaven, and, like the Jews of the old, knew not the time of their visitation. Because of their pride and unbelief, Yeshua passed them by and revealed his truth unto those who, like the shepherds of the Bethlehem and the eastern Magi, had given heed unto all the light they had received. That's found in the Great Controversy, 598. With the abundance of the evidence herein made available unto all, no one need remain in ignorance of the source through which the Yahweh reveals himself, if each will but investigate personally. Graphically has the Yahweh again made known that it is perilous to make flesh your arm to entrust to someone the personal responsibility of investigating the message that comes in the name of the Yahweh. Each must for himself prove all things and hold fast to that which is good. As every true child of Yahweh has ever done, those who will not take time and pains to do this are not honest with themselves or with Yahweh, and their interest in the kingdom of heaven is not such as that shown in the parable of the merchant man who sought salvation as though seeking for goodly pearls or hidden treasure. That's Matthew 13:44-45. And those who cannot for themselves discern the difference between truth and error are prefigured by the five foolish virgins, Matthew 25:2. But there is still another class who, from the pride of opinion and for fear that in the coming unto the light they may have their errors exposed and to view, refuse to discharge their individual responsibility and consequently remain in the darkness. Still others hold back from openly taking their stand by the side of those who advocate plain but unpopular truth because of the inconvenience, reproach, and persecution which follow in the wake of being cast out of the synagogue. So the sins of prejudice, pride, and cowardice work like a cancer in the heart, lurking beneath the surface, only to rob their host of the eternal glory. They are drunken, but not with wine. They stagger, but not with strong drink. For the Yahweh hath poured out upon you the spirit of the deep sleep, and hath closed your eyes. The prophets and your rulers, the seers, hath he covered. And the vision of all the prophets is become unto you as the words of the book that is sealed, which men deliver to one that is learned, saying, read this, I pray thee. And he saith, I cannot, for it is sealed, not essential unto salvation, etc. And the book is delivered unto him that is not learned, saying, read this, I pray thee. And he saith, I am not learned, I must see so and so about it. Wherefore the Yahweh said, forasmuch as this people draw near me with their mouth and with their lips do honor me, but have removed their heart far from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the precept of men. Therefore, behold, I will proceed to do a marvelous work among this people, even a marvelous work and a wonder. For the wisdom of their wise men shall perish, and the understanding of their prudent men shall be hid. Isaiah 29:9-14. From this bill of the indictment which the Elohim has drawn up against those who profess to be his, we see that their ignorance is the result of their rejection of the prophets. Every succeeding Jewish generation rejected the living prophets, at the same time bearing recognition and honor to the preceding ones who were slain by and for speaking to the fathers. Thus Yahshua rebuked them, saying, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because ye build the tombs of the prophets, and garnish the sepulchres of the righteous, and say, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets." Matthew 23:29-30. Most of the Christians at the present time, by despising the gift of prophecy in the Christian era and by applying the Old Testament scriptures to Yahweh's ancient people only, have rejected all the prophets. The Seventh-day Adventist denomination, however, has long professed to believe in the spirit of prophecy, particularly in that special message that in the latter part of the last century made clear that the angel of Revelation 18:1, who is to lighten the earth with his glory, was still in the future, Early Writings 2:77, and that the prophet Elijah's message was yet to come, Testimonies of Ministers 4:75. In her letter sin attitude, however, that she is rich and increased with good and has need of nothing, neither truth nor prophets, she manifests the spirit which led the Jewish leaders to kill Yahweh's messengers and which has caused nearly all Christendom to set aside the prophet, thus teaching that they cease with the preaching of John the Baptist, thus shortening man's vision. The enemy is determinedly preparing the way for the church to reject the latter rain and never to receive the promised latter-day Pentecost. "Be glad then, you children of Zion, rejoice in Yahweh your Elohim, for he hath given you the former rain moderately, and he will cause to come down for you the rain, the former rain, and the latter rain in the first month. And it shall come to pass afterwards that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, your old men shall dream dreams, your young men shall see visions. Also upon the servants and upon the handmaids in those days will I pour out my spirit." Joel 2:23-29. See our tract number 2, 58-59. "All who cheat themselves this blessing will seal their doom forever in the valley of Jezreel." So we're in the valley of Jezreel right now. The house of David is in the valley of Jezreel. "Call his name Jezreel, for yet a little while and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu." Hosea 1:4. And Jehu was the king of all the 12 tribes of Israel. He was for 28 years. As Jezreel typifies the prophets who have been killed, as well as those who today are being killed, rejected by all who despise the gift of prophecy, 1 Thessalonians 5:20. The valley of Jezreel also, therefore, is typical. That is, as Jezreel represents the prophets, and as the valley of Achor, Hosea 2:15, stands for the destruction of those who are guilty of the Achan sin, then the valley of Jezreel, the place where Jehu destroyed the rejecters of the prophets, Hosea 1:5, must stand for the destruction of those who reject the spirit of prophecy today, those who thus become disqualified and eliminated from being the Yahshua's servants in his final work, are to be succeeded by the layman's movement. "Say ye, Jezreel, unto your brethren Ami, and unto your sisters Ruama, plead with your mother, plead," Hosea 2:1-2. Here is brought to view a layman's movement of both men and women who are to arise and proclaim the message of the Reformation unto the Seventh-day Adventist Church, their mother. They are to plead, "Put away your whoredoms out of your sight, and your adulteries from between your breasts. Let his father strip you naked and sit you as in the day that you were born, and make you as a wilderness, and sit you like a dry land and slay you with a thirst. Hosea 2, 2 and 3. Through this personified prophecy, we see that the Yahweh is not now calling forth a new denomination, even though the ministry continues to take the membership rights from the adherents of this reformatory message. Consequently, for its successful delivery to the entire sisterhood of the churches, are banding ourselves into a body of workers as a movement within a movement has been forced upon us. In brief, we are to confine our message strictly to the old organization, as did the apostles with their message for the first 3.5 years after the resurrection. They were commissioned to put forth all their effort in behalf of their parent organization only the last and the Old Testament period. Likewise, the divisions are commissioned to put forth an all-out effort in behalf of their parent, the Laodicean organization, the last and the New Testament period. Let us confidently therefore work unto the end of pressing together as an army with the banners for the proclaiming of the good tidings unto the Zion. Then only can it be said of us, how beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publishes peace, that bringeth good tidings of good, that publishes salvation, as saith unto Zion, thy Yahweh and Yahshua the Son reigneth. Isaiah 52:7. Brother, sister, if you want a part in this never so glorious work, you dare not longer delay in lifting your voice to help warn mother what Father is about to do unto her unlawful children, the tares. Well, it looks like we're at the end of our study this hour. This brings us contact on us at the 11th hour call and click on this message and more, and then you also, we're going to close with a song. Softly and tenderly, Yahshua is calling. Softly and tenderly, Yahshua is calling, calling for you and for me. See, on the portals he's waiting and watching, watching for you and for me. Come home, come home. You are really come home. Earnestly, tenderly, Yahshua is calling. Calling for sinners, come home. Why should we tarry when Yahshua is pleading? Waiting for you and for me. Why should we linger and heed not his mercy? Mercy's for you and for me. Come home, come home. You are ready, come home. Earnestly, tenderly, Yahshua is calling, calling for sinners, come home. Time is now fleeting, the moments are passing, passing from you and from me. Shadows are gathering, deaths are coming, coming for you and for me. Come home, come home. You are really come home. Earnestly, tenderly, Yahshua is calling. Calling us, sinners, come home. Oh, for the wonderful love he has promised for you and for me. Though we have sinned, he has mercy and pardon. Pardon for you and for me. Come home, beloved, come home. And the sweet tender Yahshua is calling for sinners.